Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Joe Burrow got the call. No, not that call. No, not. There's different calls you can get. Joe Burrow got the call from somebody important that told him, hey, man, this hole, let's stand down to that hole. We might do an Eli Manning thing. We'll play. Don't believe me? Here's Joe Burrow's own words.
I'll play whoever for whoever drafts me. You know, I'm just not going to be presumptuous about, you know, what they want to do. It's the draft. You guys have been covering it for a long time. You never know what's going to happen. Yeah, of course I want to be the first pick. You know, that's every kid's dream. You know, I've worked really, really hard for this opportunity, and I'm blessed to be in this position, and a lot of people helped me get here. So I'm just really excited to be in this place.
All right, perfect answers, by the way. He also did the, I don't know where you guys get this stuff from. Like, kind of got it from you. Kind of got it from your workout guys, too. Just saying. Anyway, Joe Burrow is going to be the number one overall pick. All right, that's good. He's Cincinnati Bengals out there. But here's the question. Should he be? And before you say, there's Gottlieb with the haterade, I've told you before, and I'll tell you again, the Chargers won that trade. They won it. Right? We look at it, and if you want to say that Eli Manning, because they won a Super Bowl, is a better quarterback than Phillip Rivers, you're allowed to. The Chargers will still have won that trade. Because the three picks that they got became Phillip Rivers, Nate Kading, who was a Pro Bowl caliber kicker, and the next year's first round pick was Sean Merriman, who you hear sometimes on Fox Sports Radio and was the rookie of the year, was a, you know, would be a top five overall pick if he came out today. So it's not just in terms of the results either that you got Kading, who was a two-time Pro Bowler, a first-team All-Pro, and a second-team All-Pro as a kicker. It's the idea that what you can get as three or four or five pieces is better than the one piece, even if the one piece becomes a Super Bowl champion, like Eli Manning did. And then you factor in that Joe Burrow does not have a plus-plus arm. Combine that with Joe Burrow does not have plus-plus hand size. And I'm not saying he's not going to be a great quarterback, but it is not a home run, especially in Cincinnati. He's got mobility. He's got the brains. But he's also older than the competition he was playing against. He was playing with a ridiculous amount of talent around him. And now he'll be on a talent-bereft team in terrible weather. Like, let's not get it twisted. Joe Burrow's going, and it's not that SEC weather is always perfect, but it's hot and steamy in the summer. And, of course, when they won the national championship, it was played in a dome. When they won the SEC championship, it was in a dome. You know what they don't have in the AFC North? That would be a dome. Domes make everything look better, right? Domes are like filters on your IG. Man, she's got perfect skin. Yeah, it's a filter. You make anybody's skin look perfect. Duh. You know? And you're in a division where, historically, you have two great franchises with two great defenses. And Cleveland's got a lot of talent if they can ever figure it out. They don't even have to figure it out, and you're already in the fourth with the fourth best franchise with the fourth most amount of talent. I don't know. I'm sitting here thinking, if I'm Cincinnati, he wants to commit to Cincinnati. And look, this is a lot like my proposal Friday on The Herd, which is the Cowboys should trade up and get Tua and then figure out what they want to do with Dak. If, you know, you can let Dak walk, you can figure out a way to sign and trade him. There's a bunch of different things that you can do. I know that Dak and Tua thing probably never happens. And I'm guessing this never happens with the Bengals. But if you actually look, this is how the Bengals were built. Don't believe me? Go look at their football reference. You remember when the Cincinnati Bengals made the playoffs 5 years in a row? Remember that? It wasn't that long ago. It wasn't like it was like last week, but it wasn't that long ago. If you go to 2012 through 2015, they went to the playoffs. Excuse me, 2011, which is 2012 playoffs, through 2015, they went to the playoffs every year. Right? I mean, think of what that team was built around. Andy Dalton was their quarterback. Andy Dalton was a second-round pick at quarterback. Their running back, the first year they went to the playoffs, was Cedric Benson, who was the now-deceased Cedric Benson, who was a tremendous college player and was, I believe, the fourth pick in the draft, but he was there. This was his second team because he had flamed out at times with the Bears. Then they had Ben Jarvis Green Ellis. Obviously, A.J. Green was has been a top-level Pro Bowl, All-Pro, future Hall of Famer during his time. But for the most part, if you look at those Cincinnati Bengals teams, including the best one, the last one, that won 12 games in 2015, go and look at it. Andy Dalton was a second-round pick. Jeremy Hill was a second-round pick. Tyler Eifert was a late first-round pick. This is before all the Andrew Whitworth, second-round pick. Carlos Dunlap, remember, second-round pick, 54th pick in the draft. Was he a great college player? He was. Why did he go so low? Because he got a DUI before the SEC championship, was passed out in his car. Michael Johnson, third-round pick out of Georgia Tech. He was their second-best defensive player. He was a first-round talent, had off-the-field issues. Geno Atkins was a fourth-round pick. He was their best defensive player. Adam Pac-Man Jones. Now, he was a first-round pick of Tennessee, but he was out of the league. Like, look, who the Bengals have always been? Solid and steady at quarterback, regardless of draft position, and they've been able to do a great job in the lower round, second round on in the draft, getting guys that other people chose to pass on and finding a way to make it work. From Adam Jones to Vontaze Burfict to Ray Mauluga, right? Remember Ray Mauluga, USC running back? How'd he go in the second round? Off the field issues. That's how that team was built. And if you're Cincinnati and you want to rebuild it to where it was when you were consistently winning in the same division, and this is around the time Steelers were good, Hall of Fame quarterback, Ravens were good, they won a Super Bowl, and you were still there every year for 5 years in a row before the bottom fell out. What do you need? Value in the draft. And then you have the signs of a guy who's really good, very smart, super clever, but small hands, not a rocket arm, and you're playing outside. Here's John Middlecoff, 3 and Out podcast, last week when he talked about Joe Burrow and how he fits in Cincinnati.
Think about the players in that division over the last couple decades that have been good. They have had big-time arms. I mean, Flacco, I know he wasn't good the last couple years, but he was good for a period of time. Obviously, Roethlisberger. Dalton, they got away with, but really, Palmer's the better example. That division's cold. It's all outside.
Yep.
I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that they fall in love with Herbert.
Right. Justin Herbert is bigger, stronger, and throws like he's firing a howitzer cannon. You know, people like to say, well, you know, Joe Burrow, Joe Montana. Does Joe Montana work if he plays in that division? Don't know. Don't know. Look, I don't believe Cincinnati moves off this pick. I think Joe Burrow got the call that Cincinnati's not playing ball, so don't even bother sitting out because they're not even entertaining the idea of trading Joe Burrow. But while half of America has already decided Joe Burrow should have pulled an Eli Manning, I wonder why the Cincinnati Bengals didn't consider allowing him to do so they could trade him anyway.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
In Dak's mind, or in his agent's mind, Dak bet on himself and won. Go look at the stats. If you looked at the stats, the offensive stats in the National Football League from last season, and you're Dak Prescott's agent, you're like, well, we did pretty well for ourselves. Dak Prescott was second in yards passing. Second. Gross stats, number one offense in football. Now, in quarterback rating, Dak Prescott was 13th in football. Right? In QBR, Dak was fourth. So pick whatever you want. You know, pick whatever stat you want. Touchdown pass the thrown, Dak was fourth. Interceptions, he had 11. So he had he was kind of mid pack in terms of all quarterbacks, right? Not Jameis Winston, not Baker Mayfield, not Phillip Rivers or Jared Goff or Kyle Allen, but he did have 11 interceptions, which is in the territory of Trubisky and Daniel Jones. But you go around and you're like, he had a good year. You ask the Dallas Cowboys, they're like, we finished 8-8. We finished 8-8 with a terrible division, a favorable schedule, and a 3-0 start. We beat one team with a winning record all season long, and that was the Philadelphia Eagles, who we couldn't score a touchdown against late in the year on the road. So a lot of this just depends upon your perception. I'm sure from Dak Prescott's agent's perspective, all these guys have signed for and will continue to sign for more money. And Dak showed that he can perform at the top of his craft, so he should be paid at the top of his field. Whereas the Cowboys are like, the numbers don't actually tell you what you think they should. Right? We made you a generous offer. We said it was our last and final. You didn't do much to dissuade us. Like, the perfect example of why, like, yards passing don't really matter. Top five in yards passing. Ready for it? Jameis Winston. How does team do? Dak Prescott, Jared Goff, Phillip Rivers, Matt Ryan. None of these teams made the playoffs. Not one of them. You want to go QBR? More telling, better, right? Lamar, Pat Mahomes, Drew Brees, then Dak, Russell Wilson, Matt Stafford, Deshaun Watson, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Ryan Tannehill, Derek Carr. A little bit more telling about success. The problem is, if you break down the splits of Dak Prescott, it's like a tale of two quarterbacks based upon how good the teams were he played against. That's really kind of what it comes down to. Really what it comes down to. He was very good at home. He was average to below average on the road. In blowouts, wins of 15 or more points, he was incredible. Incredible. Fourth quarter, not so much. But the big thing was, when you look at the opponents, the good ones, Buffalo, two touchdowns, one interception, they lost at home. Green Bay, two touchdowns, three interceptions, they lost. New England, no touchdowns. Granted, rainstorm, no touchdowns, one interception. New Orleans, no touchdowns, one interception, below 225 yards passing. Where all the stats come from? The Giants, where he had seven touchdown passes and one interception, two games against them. The Washington Redskins, he had 14 touchdown passes and two interceptions against two of the worst teams in the league. Right? Congratulations. And three and no touchdowns against the Detroit Lions. That's 17 of his touchdown passes were against terrible teams. So you can sit here and tell me all you want about Dak Prescott and how great a season he was, but it all depends upon your perception. When the Cowboys and Dak's agent aren't talking, it tells you that his agent is waiting for the call and the Cowboys have already made the call. It was in September. We said last and final. That was last and final.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Ian Rappaport reported the Panthers are going to stick with Cam Newton, right? Which actually does go in line with what their owner said, which is if Cam Newton is healthy, then Cam Newton's going to be the quarterback of the Carolina Panthers. Here's Matt Rhule. He's our new head coach, comes over from Baylor, had to say.
I'm unbelievably excited to get a chance to work with Cam. I mean, he is a diligent guy. He's working so hard, both in Atlanta and in Carolina, to get himself healthy. You know, you meet him, he's this massive man, impressive man, and I've really enjoyed getting to know him.
Okay. I've asked myself this a million times over, maybe you have as well. We all talk about Cam Newton as if the MVP year is who he is, right? Oh, man, Cam Newton, remember that MVP year? How amazing was that MVP year? That MVP year was, 2015, right? What year is it right now? It's 2020, 5 years ago. Now, they did finish 11-5 2 years later. That would be 3 years ago, or this would be three full seasons ago. But Cam Newton, since throwing 35 touchdowns and 10 interceptions in the MVP year, in which they played a super soft schedule and they had the best offense and defense and second best defense in football and got stomped in the Super Bowl against a team, by the way, who had no offense. It wasn't that they lost to the Denver Broncos. They lost to the Denver Broncos, whose offense did nothing. They lost that game because their own offense was so inept. Since then, 19 touchdowns, 14 interceptions. 22 touchdowns, 16 interceptions. 24 touchdowns, 13 interceptions. And if you want to chalk up the past 2 years to injury, that's fine. You're not going to get less. You're going to get more injured more often the more you play, especially the way in which he plays. Right? Cam Newton takes a lot of hits. Cam Newton has taken a lot of hits throughout his career. He throws a lot of picks. He's been inaccurate most of his career. He's been above 60% completion only three times in his career. And you brought in an offensive coordinator who's not only never called plays at the NFL level, but he also comes from a style of offense in New Orleans where you're kind of a dink and dunk pass game. Like, I don't see this working long term. But in the short term, I kind of get it. What's Matt Rhule known for? He's not an offensive or defensive guy. He's a motivational guy, and he's a guy who's a long-term kind of fix-it. Takes him a while, and he's a fix-it guy. And this simply buys time for the Carolina Panthers. You know, in order for you to pull Cam Newton, you have to see it on the field. You got to give him one last chance. And $19 million is not crazy money. They need a complete overhaul of their roster. They do have Christian McCaffrey, who's super talented. They've started to rebuild that offensive line. They'll continue to build with the reserves instead of drafting a quarterback. And if they draft one, they'll develop one behind Cam Newton. The Kyle Allen thing was cool till about week 7. Like, early on, Kyle Allen was like, oh, he's undefeated, he's really good, and he's playing well, and they can win. Like, and then you're like, no, we actually can't compete. It made sense to let go of Cam Newton at that time because you had somebody who was competent. Then the wheels fell off, and you just can't put him out there for 16 weeks. And unless you're literally telling the league, like the Miami Dolphins did, we're trying to be bad. And I don't think that's what Matt Rhule is, a culture guy. And it's really hard to rebuild the culture while saying, hey, we're okay with losing 14 or 15 games. You give Cam Newton one last shot at a reasonable sum of money. $19 million is a reasonable sum of money. And oh yeah, by the way, if you happen to see somebody in the draft that you want to draft and develop, you can do that too. This is not dissimilar to Alex Smith when he was in Kansas City. Not dissimilar to Sam Bradford when he was in Philadelphia, when they still traded up to get Carson Wentz. If they see a path to a guy they want, if not, there's more good quarterbacks next year, and the equity that they have with all their draft picks can support whoever the next guy is. You know, according to Jeremy Fowler, Carolina's front office is intrigued by 2021 quarterback class. It's one of the reasons they're ready to bring Cam Newton back. Remember, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields are not only two talented quarterbacks, they're from very, very close to Charlotte, North Carolina. Not that that matters, but it doesn't not matter. Case in point, Joe Burrow. And the idea is, look, if they're real, if Cam doesn't have it and they're really bad, fine. They gave him a chance. They gave him one last chance. If he's really good, fine. They stick with Cam Newton. And if they're somewhere in the middle, fine. We can always use our draft equity, trade some players, and trade up to go get one of those two guys, whoever we deem to be better. Seems to make sense to me. They probably don't want to sign one in free agency. You'd rather stick with Cam Newton. You can put all your billboards around him. It's decent for business. He's still been your guy. My guess is Cam Newton is a one-year thing. And you're probably going to get the best of Cam Newton over that 1 year because Cam has to prove he can still be a starting quarterback. So you're going to get a harder working Cam than you've ever gotten. You're going to get a more engaged Cam than you've ever gotten. And if it doesn't work, what's the worst thing that happens? You go in the draft and you draft Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence. If it does work, you keep Cam, even though that seems highly unlikely. Your options are Teddy Bridgewater. Fine. You know, Andy Dalton. Blah. Cam Newton, at least he'll put people, yet you still have to sell season tickets. Cam Newton, Christian McCaffrey, sell season tickets. And this is a chance for Cam to prove it, but also a chance for Carolina to prove he's just not that good. Joe Brady comes in, he's got his offense, it gives him a year to get up to speed in coaching against pros. It gives Cam a chance to prove it. It gives Matt Rhule a year to get his feet wet in the NFL and the Carolina Panthers a chance to understand exactly what they have and exactly what they need. I like it. I actually like it. I don't love Cam Newton, the quarterback. I don't think he's nearly as good as some people regard him because he had one and a half really good seasons in the NFL. But I think you could do a lot worse. And when you sign a free agent, they're not signing for 1 year. They're almost all signing for two. Some are signing for 3 years. Unless you want like a Marcus Mariota. Long term doesn't make sense. Short term, next 12 months, for keeping continuity, for having your quarterback, for being set in place, figuring out the rest of the draft, it makes a ton of sense.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Joe Banner joins us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Joe is the general manager of the Cleveland Browns. Of course, longtime member of the front office with the Philadelphia Eagles. Kind of spent some time this year on Fox Sports Radio. Joe, I want to start with the collective bargaining agreement, which is the ball is in the court of the players. If you were advising the players to sign or pass in the agreement, what would you advise them?
You know, for me, this is actually a pretty easy, clear cut. They should take the deal. And I don't say that because I think this is a great deal. I actually think it is a good deal, and it's much better than the deal they took 10 years ago. And I think there's a couple of things that, you know, if I were in charge, I would have made bigger priorities. I think the simple way to say the deal is the union had really a choice, picking a couple of really key visible and important issues, like the percentage the players get of the revenues. Or they could try to make progress on a large range of issues. And what they chose to negotiate for was a large range of issues with consequential but incremental improvement in all those. And they succeeded. And I just know the owners. I was actually in the negotiations 10 years ago as the only representative from a team other than the league office that was in the negotiations. The players aren't going to get a better offer. And this isn't a bad, like, crammed it down their throat kind of a thing. This is a solid plan. So I think they should say yes.
I got a couple questions about the 17th game. Who gets the home game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so here's what I'm told. They haven't finalized that, but it will be kind of rotating. So at least the preliminary idea I've heard is that, you know, 1 year, one conference has 9 home games and 8 away, and the next year it's the opposite. So, you know, you're competing in your conference and your record for playoff seeding. You'll all have the same number of home and away games. And same with the within the conference, kind of how they'll rotate, you know, who the 9th game is. It's complicated. So I don't think, I know there's not a final answer, but that's kind of the headline on kind of the initial thinking.
Okay. Why 17, not 18?
So I think there's two answers to that. One is I just really think 18 was untenable, certainly to the players and even a group of the owners from a health and safety perspective. The second issue, though, was they have history and recent conversations, frankly, in which the 18 games or 18 weeks pushes the season into ratings windows that aren't that favorable in terms of the rate setting, the way the networks do that. And therefore, we're not likely to produce anywhere near as much additional money as you would want to see to really take the fight on for 18 games versus 17.
Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox. Go ahead.
Just to be simple about that, I mean, they used to play, as you remember, not that long ago, on Labor Day weekend, for example. Ratings were horrible. And the regular season ratings in early January, a couple of times the season's ended, like on January 2nd, have also been really bad. So that was like, you know, we can push a little bit into the window, but 2 weeks is really going to start to push that window at the point where, are we really making enough money to take that fight on, push the players to play 18 games, and by the way, push the Super Bowl way into February. So that was really driven by a fairly logical monetary analysis.
Yeah, that answers my next question of why not the double bye, right? I felt like the double bye could answer some of the player safety questions, can give them, although it may give them less advantageous windows, it will give them more windows to play those games, which generally means more money. Joe Banner joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. It does seem like a deal which helps the rank and file, and on paper isn't as advantageous for the superstar player. Is that accurate?
If you're talking degree, absolutely it's accurate. But this is a situation where, you know, the all boats rise in a rising tide kind of a thing. So the veterans certainly benefit in a meaningful way. Now, if you said who benefits the most, it's not the veterans. Frankly, the retired players do really, really well in the deal, at least in my opinion. It's a significant progress. Players that aren't yet retired, but you've heard a lot of conversation about, you know, medical benefits after retirement, it improved consequentially, but certainly not, you know, all the way to what some people would think they should deserve or some of them want, but it did increase. And young players or veteran players, you know, older players are on minimum contracts, and younger players whose part of their contract, meaning drafted in the last 4 years are minimum size, those players do really, really well. They have very significant increases in the pay they're going to make moving forward. And that was one of the union's goals. They thought there was too big a difference between what the veterans were making and the young players were making. They thought the owners weren't spending some money they wanted to spend. And one of the ways they could force that was to increase these minimum salaries, especially on these players that are, you know, in their first 4 years. I mean, the players on minimum salaries are 60% of the players in the league. Those players, from a percentage basis, are seeing extremely large increases. They would have started this year, not even like in kind of the new years of the deal. They would have started this year, so that's what they're walking away from.
Joe Banner joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show. All right, let's get to some of the other things going on in the NFL. What's your take on Mac Mayock and Bruce Arians, both kind of saying like, hey, look, we like our guy. Actually, Mayock said we thought Derek Carr was great, but if we could get better, like this is not something I feel like is generally done in public. The idea of, hey, we'd be open to upgrading at the quarterback position, why so public in their opining for somebody elite?
Like, I had the same reaction as you. We just don't see this in kind of what's the benefit of saying this kind of out loud publicly. I mean, I guess you avoid future criticisms of not being, you know, straightforward, but I think the media actually understands in certain situations why it's difficult and not in the team's best interest to be so forthcoming. So I don't know. And in Tennessee's case, where there's some Brady rumors, in fact, some media people who are setting odds made Brady the favorite to go there, they have to negotiate with a player they've had. I guess they assume they could put a tag on him if they can bring this to a head quickly. But how do you take the risk of sending that message to that player? Same thing with Derek Carr. Listen, I'm surprised by it, and I don't think it's smart. I think you can move in that direction. You can evaluate your options, and you don't have to be publicly. Because now what happens is everybody, the next time one of those quarterbacks, what's Carr going to say the next time he's in front of the media? You know, well, you know, I hope to be back. How does he explain what was just said? It's really, at least to a degree, a vote of no confidence. So I think those people are going to look back and say, you know what, I should have been just a little bit more careful with my words publicly.
Yeah, I would agree. Joe Burrow said today he'll show up wherever he's drafted. If he's drafted number one overall, he kind of questioned where the media would get this from. Didn't we get it from him because he wasn't fully committed? Like, this is like the Jim Crane, the Houston Astros thing. Like, wait, I just heard you say this, right? I'm not wrong for thinking that, am I?
No, listen, I think he's been careful, but if he had just said that every time he was asked a question from the first time, it wouldn't have been a story. I mean, it was a reasonable question to ask at the beginning because we have a history with both the Bengals and, you know, with the particularly with the situation with Eli Manning, where this has actually happened. So it was a reasonable question to ask. And if he had just been that unambiguous from day one, it would have been, you know, would have gone away reasonably quickly. So, yes, we did. We got it from him. Now he's making it sound like where did it come from.
But should the Bengals consider moving him?
I'd say absolutely not. I mean, the most valuable thing you get and the hardest thing to find is a top tier, I'd say top 10, perfect world, top five quarterback. It's the hardest thing to find, the most important thing to find, and you get almost no chances. And he clearly has a chance to be that. I'm not prepared to sit here and say he is that. He clearly has a chance to be that. By the way, if it wasn't for the injury risk, which to me is a huge problem, I don't mean to say that casually. I mean, Tua does too. But if you get a chance to pick one of those guys, you need to pick them, and they shouldn't even give it a thought.
Okay. Speaking of Tua, how cautious would you be with that hip injury?
Extremely. It's not the hip injury for me, because he can be completely healthy on that. And this is what I learned over the years. It's really, really rare. There are exceptions. So I'm not saying this like it's a 100% thing. It's really rare that a quarterback, really any player, gets hurt less in the pros than they did in college. The guys are bigger, stronger, faster. The schemes are more complex. It's really rare. So if you're looking at a player that's having a lot of college injuries, as he has, the odds are very high that he continues to have a significant number of injuries. Now, there are exceptions. We've all seen them. But if you look at the whole pool of players, now, the upside there is huge to me. I mean, to me, he's the number one pick easily if there's no injury history. But you are taking a huge risk. It's a tough decision. It's one of the reasons I'm glad that I'm speaking to you from Hawaii, and I don't have to figure it out.
Joe Banner joining us live from Hawaii. Okay, what do you make of the fact that Cowboys and Dak haven't spoken since September in terms of contract?
Yeah, I was surprised to hear that, but I still believe they'll get a deal done. I don't think they were that far apart from what I heard last time. It was more of a structural issue and then a modest issue in terms of the size of the deal. So we'll see what happens. But I think they want him. They know they can't mess around anymore. There is a risk because once these things drag on, emotion gets into it. But I'd be surprised if we're not reading in the next 2 to 3 weeks that they have a deal done.
Cam Newton appears to be back as the Carolina Panthers quarterback. You bring in an offensive coordinator who comes from LSU comes from the Saints by way of LSU. Does that fit? Like, what's your? It does feel like it's a bad fit, even if it's just a 1 year deal.
Yeah, you know, I think the key in your question is the word appears. I'm not convinced he's coming back. Not saying it's sure he's not, but I've watched Matt Rhule. He was in Philadelphia turning the Temple program around before he went down to Texas to turn the Baylor program around. And I see him as a guy that would prefer to have a really just kind of solid, consistent, healthy quarterback who may be a B quarterback than a guy he's not sure he can count on for 16 weeks every year, who could, in some people's eyes, maybe even his, be an A quarterback. So I think in the end, Matt Rhule is going to drive the decision. I don't think they bring somebody like that in if they're not prepared to really trust him. Now, obviously, the general manager and the owner will have a voice. But I think in the end, if Matt has an opinion on it, they'll go with what he wants. And I think that's a story to keep an eye on. I'm not sure that Cam is coming back.
What do you think happens with Brady?
Now, my best guess is he's back in New England. I mean, I just, I think his issue is just feeling like he's got to be surrounded by players to believe he really has a chance to win, because I really think at this point in his career that's all he cares about. He's not going to go any place that doesn't have a chance to win. He's not going to go any place that doesn't have a top-tier offensive line. I mean, he's learned that lesson. He understands that. He does need to have a reasonable degree of weapons, but he definitely cares even more about the offensive line. And I think he's got a good relationship with Josh McDaniels. I think he realizes Josh makes a difference, even though there are times in those situations, as everywhere, that they butt heads. So I think it will be really interesting to watch, and I don't say that like it's a sure thing, but in the end, my best guess is he goes back to New England.
Best guess on Phillip Rivers?
I'm down at Tampa Bay and Indianapolis would be my two top guesses.
Yeah, Indy indoors and Frank Reich, whereas Tennessee feels like better weapons. Bruce Arians. My only fear with Tampa is Bruce likes to throw the ball deep downfield, and that I don't think he's that guy anymore. Maybe he never was, but I don't feel like he's that guy. That would be my fear there.
Yeah, I for me, and I think that's absolutely right. I just think as you look at the options, and you got to be realistic. I mean, Tampa Bay isn't going to be the top of the list of the most desired guys. I think Bruce is a good enough coach and flexible enough that he can cater to somebody like Phillip. And I think they become a majorly better team. And especially if they're committed to getting Todd Bowles a few more players on defense, because I worked with Todd. I have incredible respect. Hard for me to come up with a name who I think is a better coordinator, and he did a good job last year with really, really limited talent. So I think it's a place that has a real chance to be a surprise team next year if they get the right quarterback.
Great stuff. Joe, get back to Hawaii and check out High Steakhouse. Get that table-made Caesar salad if you're in Oahu, and I appreciate you joining us.
My pleasure. Good talking to you. Take it easy.
All right. Mahalo. That's Joe Banner.